welcome, everyone, to Black Talk Radio and Your Money, Your Matters. We certainly are glad that you are here with us again today on a very fine Tuesday, and as it sort of indicates with the senior year spring musical going on behind us, that we'll be talking about what's going on at the end of high school and what's going in the future as far as college is concerned, how you're going to fund that and everything else. So that is what we're going to spend our time in the next hour talking about, is what you do as far as education is concerned and how you're going to be able to afford education. We certainly hope that you will be able to join us. Give us a call at 646-929-1020. That's 646-929-1020. And give us a, and you can chat with us in the chat room if you so desire. Or you can chat with us on the air. All you have to do is press the number one key, and that will raise your digital poll, and I will know at that point in time that you would like to talk on the air, and I will bring you on. Again, the phone number is 646-929-1020, and you can always go to blogtalkradio.com/money_matters. That's blogtalkradio.com/money_matters, and you can get into the chat room. If you don't want to be on the air but you want to ask a question or you want to register an opinion, go right ahead and do that and put it in the chat room. I'm monitoring the chat room, and I'm monitoring also the phone lines, and so we will certainly bring you on the air if that's what you so desire. So in a lot of cases in the past week, and certainly upcoming in the next couple of weeks, there will be a lot of graduations going on, a lot of preparations for graduations going on, students finishing up their high school year, and hopefully they are prepared to go on to college or some other higher form of education, some learning. It might be a technical school, or it might be a community college where they're going to learn certain skills. Those are all fine opportunities for people to do, and certainly I would encourage any and all of that, to be quite candid. Just depends upon what you want to do and where you want to go and how you're going to pick that and how you're going to be able to afford that, and we're going to talk a little bit about how you're going to be able to afford that on the show. Now, we do know that for all of those that are finishing up their junior year in high school, that this comes into the big summertime, when you start to make a decision as to where you're going to go for college. It sounds like it's kind of an interesting thing that you're going to make that decision now, that you're going to try to determine where you're going to go for college and with your just getting out of your junior year. But it's very, very important to make sure that you have selected your career and make some plans for that, because this is not an inexpensive venture. We just don't walk off with a set of books that they have given to us in the classroom and go home, study, come back the next day, do a few problems, switch from one classroom to another. College is a whole different experience when you go off and do that. So you want to be able to select the right college for you, the one that fits with you, but also one that you can afford, and you have to set a plan out for that. You know, we talk a lot about in this show about planning and putting things down on a piece of paper. You can register it in an iPad if you want to, and you can put it on your computer, or you can put it on your iPhone, or however you like it. But I happen to like writing it down on a piece of paper because I scribble things out, I add to it, I subtract to it, and then when I get to something that's final, I might then at that point in time put it down into a financial planner of some sort. But I do like the mechanics of scribbling it down on a piece of paper. And you're going to want to take a look at a lot of things, certainly how you're going to be able to afford college when you get to college, and what are the types of things that the college will afford you when you graduate, when you leave college. So this is an important time in your junior year as you step into the summertime. You're probably going to be taking your SATs and various other scoring mechanisms, although some universities have shied away from that recently, and that is, you know, certainly up to them to determine how they're going to admit students and how they're going to determine which students they will admit. And it depends upon certainly your school ranking as well. One of the things that I've always talked about on this show and many times with various crowds is that if you have that opportunity, if your high school is linked with, say, a community college or a college nearby, and they're offering college credit courses that also fulfill your high school requirements, I would do that from the standpoint that the more college credits that you can knock off at an inexpensive price, The better off you're going to be coming out of a four-year institution, or maybe you're going on for a graduate degree, but the better off you will be when you get into the working world. You will not have as much debt. Hopefully you don't have any debt, but we have certainly seen that the history of it has certainly grown since the early 2000s up until now. In fact, student loan debt has grown from 2004 until now, you know, in the past 10 years, 300%. And it now tallies at about $1.2 trillion, which is significantly higher than actually the debt for auto loans, the debt for car credit card loans, and the debt that is being held by people for home equity loans. It doesn't surpass, of course, mortgage loans, but that's an entirely different scope of lending. That is a much more of a long-term loan than a short-term loan, like a credit card loan or a home equity or an auto loan. But $1.2 trillion is currently being held by students, and the number of borrowers from 2004 to now increased about 70%. 23 million were borrowers back in 2004. There's about 39 million of them today. So if you take $1.2 trillion, you start dividing out and working up some of the math, you find that a lot of people have, I would say, a significant amount of debt. Now, you know, we've always heard that the students are in significant debt. I've heard that this morning in a meeting that I was attending as well, that one of the reasons that students aren't, or that millennials, the millennials of today, which is kind of the trailing end, because we have to remember that millennials are really between the ages of 34 down to 18. So those that are just entering college this year are the trail end of the millennials, and then we have beyond that, we will have the Gen Zers, as they are called it. So the trailing end of the millennials are now going to be entering college. But in 2013, not 2014, because they haven't added all that up yet, which always perplexes me from the standpoint that we talk about education and math, but they're a year behind. But that's a whole entire different story. The average four-year graduate has a debt of about $25,000. So it may not be as bleak as everybody says it is. It's certainly not $50,000 or $100,000. Yes, there are people that have that much money in debt when they get out of college. But that's really a very small percentage of them. It's not, you know, there's only 10% of them that have a balance of $50,000 or more. So 70% of the borrowers have a balance under $25,000, which is certainly a doable number. I mean, it's a large number, but it's a doable number. One that I wouldn't want to have. I mean, I will be candid. I did a lot of work when I went to college, and so my college was paid for by two things. First, the GI Bill. I was in the military when I first started out of college. In college, I was not in the military, and I was paying that out of my pocket. And the way that I was paying for that is that I was working during the summers. I was working on the weekends, and there were times that I would work during the week as well if I could find a job that would fit with my school schedule. But I was picking up that money. I was using savings that I had saved for over 4 or 5 years to afford going to college, and then I was paying for all of the rest from what I saved in summertime jobs, and certainly jobs that I would do on the weekend. So my first 2 years while I was in college, I paid for very much out of my pocket. I got a little bit of relief in the latter part of my college education because I also incorporated the GI Bill into that, and so the GI Bill was paying for a portion of it. It doesn't pay for everything, but it certainly paid for a good chunk of what I had, and so I was able to take care of that. Now, I don't always tell everybody and encourage everybody, hey, what you need to do is, in order to go to college, is to join the military. I mean, I did that. There are many other people that have done that, certainly over a period of time. We've seen the, even in the volunteer service, we've seen more and more recruits come into the military, and one of the primary reasons is that they can pay for their education in that manner once they leave, and they can use the GI Bill. I would remind you that if you join, and these are this is to high schoolers, because I know that there are some high schoolers that will come out that might go to a year of college, or they might go straight into the military. Here is my suggestion. Don't always focus on just the GI Bill. If you have the desire, the aptitude, the skills, the capabilities, whatever you might want to call it, and you're just going to go from high school right into the military, I would explore with a recruiter the OCS program, which is the Officer Candidate School program. Yes, you'll have to stay in the military a little bit longer if you are accepted in that program and you graduate from that program. But as officers in the military, you can also go to school while you are in the military. It may not be during your first 2 years, but in the latter part of the years, you'll be able to go to colleges and universities, and it will be part of your training. And in that point in time, everything is paid for by the military while you go to college or university. So you can think about that as an opportunity. I like I said, it's military is not for everyone. And for those that are so inclined, if you're going to do that and just go in for the GI Bill, that's okay. But I would consider doing OCS if you have the inclination to do that. I would never encourage somebody, and I know that a lot of people do it, and I know that our program certainly is brought to you by the Cornerstone Credit Union League, the Cornerstone Credit Union Foundation, the Consumer Credit Counseling Service. I don't want to leave them out, and certainly everybody does a very, very good job at lending people money so that they can go to colleges and universities and higher education, and that's all very, very important. But at the same time, I couldn't talk with you correctly. If I didn't say that what you really need to do is spend a lot of time saving money while you were in high school and working at something while you were in college and even during the summertime to spend some of that money towards your education. Because a lot of these loans may pick up tuition and books, but they may not pick up room and board. And you don't want to get yourself buried in debt so that when you get out, and we'll talk about that in a moment, you just don't want to get buried in debt when you get out of college, because then you have to deal with that, and it's not really a fun thing to do. Anyway, we started the show by letting you know that the title of the program today was Oh Nuts, and the reason for that is that today is May 12th, and on May 12th in 1888, a tradition happened at that point in time. So today is known as National Nutty Fudge Day. Yeah, National Nutty Fudge Day. And here's the reason why. There was a young lady, Emily Bettersby Hartridge, who was a student at Vassar College, and she was looking for a way of raising funds to continue her education at Vassar College. And she knew of a recipe that her cousin had made a couple of years prior, which was a concoction of, you know, homemade candy, basically. And it involved chocolate and a lot of sugar and butter and nuts and a couple of other things. And they called it fudge. So Emmeline got the recipe from her cousin, and in 1888 she made 30 pounds of chocolate nut fudge for a senior auction at Vassar College. Well, that just took off. Everybody just loved this homemade candy concoction, and it just took off. And the following year, the colleges around Vassar College had a competition as to who could make the best fudge. And so when that started taking off, other people began to notice that people really liked this homemade candy. And in the early 20th century, that's the 1900s, 1902, 1903, somewhere around there, the tourist shops in Mackinac Island in Michigan, which is, you know, just kind of north and in the water, they began making fudge and selling it to vacationers. Vacationers loved it and just spread across the United States as this sort of national candy that was made. So some time ago, someone somewhere along the line got it declared to be National Nutty Fudge Day. And so we kind of looked at that and thought, well, how are you going to raise funds when you go to college? Are you going to sell fudge or are you going to sell your future? And so we would like you not to sell your future. We would like for you to be able to come out with a four-year degree, or if you go on and get a graduate degree, we'd like you to come out with a graduate degree, that you don't owe any money when you come out. You're free and clear. You have no debt. Now, that may be reasonable, and it may not be reasonable. But in any case, I think that, you know, it certainly is cause to think about it and begin to put a plan together as to how you're going to pay for college. Is it that your folks have just enough money and they've been saving in a 529 ever since the day you were born, and they've got a whole ton of dollars saved up for your college education, and basically you're set? Depending upon what college that you're going to go to. That may be the case. It may not be the case. It may be that the recession, as it did for a lot of people, wiped out a lot of savings that people had. Now, probably didn't wipe out a 529, but it wiped out a lot of savings and investments that people had. And that may have put a different light as to how you're going to be able to afford college. And we certainly could see that happening during the Great Recession in the 2008-2009 timeframe. You know, one of the reasons that we, when I look at it from a statistical standpoint, and people that know me know that I deal here at the Cornerstone Credit Union League and in the economics and research area, so I'm dealing with statistics all of the time and trying to figure out what is going on, and then by that giving financial institution and consumers some direction as to where I think things are going at this point in time, and what's a safe road or what's a safer road and what's not a safe road at all, and so that, you know, try to give people some choice on the matter. But there's been a lot of reasons that all of this student debt basically has risen, and one of them is tuition costs. But that isn't all of it. We can't all blame it on the university that their tuition has gone through the roof. There have been an increased number of students that have entered colleges, and therefore many colleges have had to find other instructors. They've had to build new rooms and buildings to house all of the influx of these students. And mind you, they're not all from the United States. The United States has one of the most wonderful education systems in the world, to be candid. And there are people from all over the world that come to the United States because of its education, and they want to go to a U.S. A college or university. And so that is part of their plan, is to come to the United States and be educated in the United States because of our education system. So not only are you competing against the people in your high school to go to a college, you're competing against people that are in your state, the people that are in the nation, and then there are people that are coming into the country to compete with you as well. So you have to be on the top of your game when it comes to any kind of entrance exams or anything for the university. So, but don't blame tuition costs all on the colleges and the universities, especially if they're a state college and a state university. The number of students have caused a lot more expenses because of the influx and the need to educate them. There's been a greater reliance on debt financing, and that is we've certainly seen from an economic standpoint people not owning but renting. Instead of owning an automobile, they lease an automobile. Instead of owning a home, they rent a home or they lease a home. And we've seen a lot more of that. Certainly, we've seen that after the recession, but we saw it before the recession as well. We've seen home ownership go down somewhat and home renting go up somewhat, prior to the recession. So we can't blame it all on the recession. That has been a trend that has been taking place for the past 10 to 15 years, and it seems like that what people are wanting to do is not own a whole bunch of stuff. They would just like to rent a whole bunch of stuff. And that may be good or bad. I mean, to be candid with you, when you look at it from a real estate standpoint, if you own a home, this is not an asset. This is not a savings plan. You need to understand that when you own a home, you have a great deal of liability to it. First is the mortgage. Then you have property taxes, you have utilities, you have repair costs, you have insurance costs. All of those costs have to be worked into home ownership. So a true asset is one where you have an ownership in it and it is contributing to the revenue stream. That would mean I own the home, but I don't live there. I rent it. I rent it out to somebody else. And that would be a true asset. A home is a wonderful thing to build a nest on, to build a future with, that you're going to stay at some place for a permanent period of time, and you are not inclined to, you know, pack up and move. But it comes at a cost. And so don't look at a single home ownership as an asset or your future savings plan. But back to schools. The reason that tuition has gone up, and this is, quite candidly, because we need more administrators, because we need more faculty, because of the faculty that we have there, as I've talked with many of the universities and colleges here in the area, one of the things that they want to do is they always want to make sure that they have the best Tier 1 university, and to be a Tier 1 university means you have to have some pretty smart faculty, and that means that at times you want to get Nobel laureates in to do your teaching and your research, and you want to get large research grants, and you'll get large research grants if you have Nobel laureates in there that are also performing, and they're not cheap. These are very expensive individuals. They have studied this thing for many, many, many years. They have not only one, but maybe multiple doctorates. And so to have these people on staff is an expensive proposition. The other thing that has happened, especially to universities that had received state funding, is that a lot of public colleges and universities, the state government, in order to save the taxpayer money and to be able to go back to the taxpayer and say, I have saved you tax dollars, they have reduced the amount of money that they give to colleges and universities. So colleges and universities have had to absorb the costs and to figure out how to get beyond those costs. They have to raise tuition in order to cover the costs. So it's not always the universities and the colleges that have the choice in raising the cost of tuition. That wasn't their choice. Sometimes it is thrust upon them by our legislators who, through whatever mandate they were given by the voters when they went into office, the voters may have very easily said to them, look, what we want you to do is reduce our taxes. And so they've gone in and found ways to reduce the taxes. And one of the ways that you do that on the state level is that you don't give education as much money out of the state coffers, which means those universities have to make up for that difference some other way. Not always the best plan, to be candid. Remember, a lot of people come to the United States because of our education system, and if we reduce down the amount of money that we have invested in the education system, it will also reduce down the value of those universities and colleges. So there's a scale here. You can pay less taxes, but you'll have an education system that won't be up to par with a lot of other people. So But all in all, what we have seen, of course, for borrowing for colleges, we've seen a surge of this, and it's grown at about a 14% annual rate, which is, you know, astronomical. I would like to have an investment grow 14% on an annual rate, and I would retire with those types of investments. But the the college costs and the borrowing on college costs, not the interest rate, but the amount of money that people are borrowing for college has grown at a 14% annual rate. Again, that isn't because people are stacking money on top of money on top of money. People are doing that, but more and more people realize that they have to go to college in order to get themselves a good job, and that's where the economy is today. In fact, I was looking at some statistics not too long ago, and these statistics dealt with the unemployment rate, and the unemployment rate for someone that has a high school diploma, and that's all they have, they've just graduated from their senior year in high school, and they're now going to go out in the working world. The unemployment rate for those folks is about 18%. Now, we're looking at about 5.4% now. Remember, just about a week ago, they declared that we're at a 5.4%. But if somebody's walking around with just a high school diploma and they're now looking for full-time gainful employment, there's about an 18% unemployment rate if you just hold a high school diploma. Now, over a period of time, certainly that diminishes, but those that are what you would consider experienced individuals, they've been in a job for a period of time, and they only have a high school diploma, the unemployment rate for them is just about 10%. So it's about double what one would be if they went on to college. So if you're listening to this and you're trying to make up a decision as to, well, you know, I'd like to go to college, but I don't know really what I would like to do. I mean, I have some interests, and those are the things that I have interest in. I have skills and capabilities in some areas, but I don't know if those are the types of skills and capabilities that I want to go forward. Maybe I'm you know, a supreme artist. Maybe I can draw just absolutely wonderfully. But we also know that people that are in the arts and humanities, writers and artists, well, there's a reason that they call them starving for a period of time, because you go for a long period of time working in this profession before somebody may notice you and determine, gosh, you know, your painting of the ladies there is now worth about $179 million as the Rembrandt that was just sold. Of course, Rembrandt didn't get to see a dime of that, but you know, he's long since passed, but his artwork still lives on, and it's wonderful artwork, but he wasn't around to enjoy it. And most of the artists, you look at Rembrandt or Michelangelo, great sculptor, great painter, most of them were absolutely living in poverty almost all of their lives, but they loved what they were doing, which, you know, you put a lot of heart in it, and they were able to afford themselves a living at the time. Of course, there's not a lot of calling right now for by the popes to paint a new piece of art on a ceiling. So you might starve a little bit longer, but certainly there are a lot of people that graduate with great art degrees, have studied under some great masters to learn art, and then have gone out and hopefully have created some wonderful pieces that they can live off of. Although I do know some people that do that as a living in a profession right now, and they're doing okay, but they're nowhere near where a lot of other people would like to be. So, you know, you really have to take a look at all of your skills and capabilities and make sure you work with your guidance counselor in high school and counselors that they have at the universities. You know, one of my real good friends is a dean of students, and he spends a great deal of time talking with people about where they want to go and what they want to do and what are their interests and what are their skills and what are their capabilities. And so how do we knit all of that together to make something interesting out of that? And you will find in colleges and universities they can be very, very flexible. And I'll give you an example. When I first went to the university, University of Wisconsin, by the way, go Bucky, all of the degrees that they had there were not really what I was inclined to do. I loved aviation. I loved flying. I was very adept at math and science. My strongest skills were in math and science. And I sat down with the dean of students at that time and said, this is what my where my interests are. And he talked to me about engineering, which is a very good, and we'll talk about engineering here in a moment, but it's a very good profession. But I really didn't have an interest in being a mechanical engineer or a civil engineer or electrical engineer or even a computer science engineer, as they were called at that time, because I wanted to fly planes. And so what we did talk about is how can we put things together, and we actually developed a brand new career path and degree program at the University of Wisconsin called Aeronautical Engineering. That was something that he then went to professors around the university and said, we have this kid. I mean, I don't know if he called me a bright kid, but, you know, we have this kid who's really good in math and science and also flies planes. And this is where his interests are, and could we put something like this together? And they put together an aeronautical engineering degree, which was the path that I started on, funny as it may be. The thing that I want to stress, however, is that for those types of degrees, you spend a great deal of time, and a four-year degree is probably not sufficient then in the world or now. So you're going to go on and get a graduate degree of some sort. So, you know, let's take a look at degrees, because these are the types of things that you're going to be able or going to want to make some choices on as you move forward in your education as to where do I want to go, and which one, if 4 years from now I graduate, is this going to be a good degree or is that going to be a good degree? Should I study computer science? Do I have an inclination towards medicine? Whatever it might be. So let me give you a couple of examples. And I'll do this as far as an unemployment rate is concerned. Those that are in architecture and social sciences, and social sciences being the humanities, the history, you know, maybe you want to study history for a long period of time, but the social sciences, dealing with social work, and those have the highest unemployment rates. Now, they aren't as high as somebody with a brand new high school degree. But if you have a brand new college degree and you have a BA, and that's your college degree, you're going to be looking at about a 10% unemployment rate. Because we know that for example, people that are very good architects many times have gone through a four-year program and then gone through a very specialized program to learn how to do specific types of design work, whether it be homes or buildings or great works of art, or whether it be a concert hall or a church, and there's all kinds of specialties in it. And you're going to do a great deal of work and study in that. You're going to go and study many of the buildings that have been constructed, join a firm, and you'll be somewhere down there sharpening drafting pencils for a period of time. It's just the way it works. In the same way with social sciences, we know that, for example, somebody that wants to go and be a social worker, which is a wonderful occupation, number one, you're not going to make a lot of money over your lifetime as a social worker, but you'll do a lot of really good work. We know that. And so it's a heart thing. It's not a money thing. We know that you're not going to make a lot of money doing social work. However, you're going to need a master's degree because almost all of them have to have a master's degree in order to perform that type of thing, because you may have to be licensed by the state that you're practicing in. So those types of things take place, and then you're going to have a graduate degree, and then you're going to have to do some understudy for a period of time and then be an intern possibly and then work into it. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, those that are in the physical sciences, maybe you're a chemical engineer or an electrical engineer, maybe you're a physicist of some sort, you know, all of these types of sciences have the least amount of unemployment. Now, not a lot of people go in those areas, which may account for, you know, they're in a higher demand and thus there is a lower unemployment rate, but there's also a lower unemployment rate in education and healthcare. because of the way the population is growing in the United States and what it's doing, and because of the demand on education, especially as we grow as a nation, we have more kids, we have more schools, there is going to be a greater need for teachers. And you can see that in many locations throughout the United States where there's just not enough teachers to fill the classrooms so that you can take care of the kids and have a good teacher-to-student ratio. And so education has one of the lowest unemployment rates in the United States, along with health care. Those that graduate either with an associate's degree in health care, maybe it is a nurse's aide or maybe it's a dental assistant of some sort, or whether you go on to get a four-year degree or you go on and go through graduate school or you get your doctorate in some practice, your doctorate in nursing or your doctorate in a specialized type of medicine, maybe it's internal medicine or maybe you're a cardiologist or whatever it might be. All those things are there, but they're very, very expensive. They're long hauls, and we know that for a period of time, you're not going to have a lot of money because you're going to be studying day and night and weekends and evenings, and you're not going to have a lot of opportunities to go out and earn the dollars that you need. So you need to be able to do something in order to cover the costs, and either that is that you've saved up enough money or you're working at something and you're able to afford that, or somebody is floating the bill for you, maybe the parents, whomever it might be, somehow, some way you're covering the costs on that. And you certainly don't want to graduate from the university with a medical degree and all of a sudden realize that you owe $120,000. Now, there are people that do that. But it's $120,000, and it's a 10-year period of time. So you really have to be earning a fabulous income right out of the chute in order to be able to afford that, and not everybody has that opportunity. So typically what happens is that a four-year graduate, the one that has their BA, they might have, and in 2013, this is about what it was, about $26,000 in debt. It's certainly not the greatest thing to have, but that actually is a fairly low number if you take a look at it. It's a couple of thousand a year that you're going to have to pay. Now you know that when you first step out, depending upon what type of student loans that you might have taken, and I encourage you to work with your universities and work with the Office of Finance and Financial Aid to discover which ones those are, and do that early, by the way. You need to do that early, and you need to do that if you're a junior in high school right now and you go out and start exploring colleges and you walk around and you talk to some of the professors and you talk to some of the students and you see the great buildings that are there, and maybe they entertain you by showing you the football game or something of that nature. You need to go and talk with the dean of students, and you need to go and talk with the people in the financial aid department of the university to see what they can do, because many times, depending upon what profession you want to follow and the universities and your grades that you had in high school, you could get grants and scholarships. And a lot of these grants and scholarships don't have to be repaid. So these are the first opportunities if you feel that you can't carry it because you don't have the savings yet. Begin to explore that, and that doesn't mean it all has to come from the university that you're going to attend. There are many opportunities for people to earn grants and scholarships to cover various things. For example, a journalist. There is the Public Relations Society of America. There is the American Journalist Association. There are many associations in the United States that will provide grants and scholarships to individuals that are going to explore certain fields because of some benefactor at some point in time put up some money so that these professions would continue to be explored by future students. And I would explore those if I were you. I would take a look at it and see if the direction that you're going and the grade level that you have and everything else, you can apply for some of these grants and some of these scholarships that don't have to be repaid, but will supplement some of the costs, if not all of the costs, at a university. I mean, not all of us are great athletes. Not all of us are we going to have scouts in our junior year or maybe earlier. Sitting in the stands, watching us play football or basketball or volleyball or baseball or whatever it is, and say, that individual I want on our team in college. And not all of us have that opportunity, and not all of us have that skill set. And that's good. I mean, I don't have any problem with that at all. So not all of us are going to get an athletic scholarship to pay the full boat at a university for a 4-year period of time, so that I can go off and win national titles for the university. You know, you will not always have a visit by Nick Saban. I'm sorry, but you just won't. Not all of us are in that. So maybe it's scholastic scholarships that we have, or maybe it's some other types of scholarships or grants because we happen to like and explore maybe writing and journalism, and that's what we are the most interested in. And we're very good with words, and we know how to put sentences together that build colorful pictures in somebody's mind. And by being able to enter those types of things in a grant or scholarship program, we can actually be awarded some dollars to help supplement our future. And if that's what you can do, do it. Because that certainly you have to work for it, obviously. You're going to be spending time and talent to do that, but you are not out there with a shovel and a pickaxe digging a ditch to lay a new gas line. That's what I did. You talk about tough work after a period of time. Spend a summer out there digging a ditch with a pickaxe and a shovel so that they can lay a new gas line. And these are small gas lines. These aren't the big ones. These are small gas lines that would run from the street to a home. You do that for a summer, and you find out what the value of college is. This is something you probably won't want to do all of your life. There are those that absolutely love doing that, and they love that physical labor, and God bless them. We do need to have the gas lines up to our house, and I'll let them do that, but I'm not going to do it. It's not something for me to do. Anyway. As you select those types of things and you determine what we want to do, you can begin to put down on that piece of paper that I told you to make your plan on, put down on that piece of paper exactly what you think that you're going to be spending money on and how much is it going to cost. And again, you can get these types of things from the university by talking with the certainly the university and finding out what all the costs are as far as tuition is concerned and everything else that that goes along with being a student at the university or college or technical school or wherever you are going to spend your money in your education. But I think that you need to put it down on a piece of paper. But you also need an idea of when I graduate, what types of or how much am I thinking I'm going to be able to get out of this profession, because not all of them may be as rewarding as we would like them to be. And let me give you a couple of examples. And if you need more examples, here's what I'm going to suggest that you do. Get a piece of paper and a pencil, and I'll in a moment I will tell you where you can get a copy of this document that I'm going to read from right now. And I think it's one of the most valuable studies that I've seen on the university system and what it costs to go on to college, and it breaks it down by various occupations. But if I was that recent high school graduate, I graduate with my diploma from high school, I decide I'm going out into the working world, I'm going to begin to earn money, and that's what I need to do. Maybe you want to do that for a couple of years before you go to college. That's okay. Gross-wise, however, you can only expect, even with the high unemployment, if you get a job, about $24,000 a year. So if I just have a high school diploma, I will probably earn just $24,000 a year unless I study a trade. And there, if I study a trade, I'm going to have to be an apprentice for a while. So it's probably still going to come back to about $24,000 a year. People that are out there with high school diplomas that are experienced at certain things average about $36,000. Now, you can see that jumped up from 24. So there are those that have a high school diploma that are doing quite well, and maybe they are in a trade and they are a specialist in that trade. They are very good in that trade, and therefore they command high dollars, but not everybody is there. Not everybody's a football player. Not everybody's a basketball player. And get a scholarship, and not everybody is, you know, the primo welder. So there are people out there that can weld things, yes, but then there's guys that just, you know, I mean, they do it and you don't even know how they put those two things together. You know, you're going to be looking at on an average of about $36,000 a year, and that's not a lot of money if you look into today's economy. Even the ones that with a recent high school diploma earning $24,000 a year, if you are out on your own and you're having to pay for room and board and transportation and clothing and those types of things, you're right at the poverty line, just about. But if you are a recent graduate with a diploma in hand and you are going out, let's say, in the field of education, we mentioned education, you're probably going to look at a starting salary of around $33,000. Now, if you decide that I'm going to go on and go and get my master's, and most teaching positions today require that you have a master's of some sort, you'll jump from $33,000 to about $49,000 on the average. Now, again, that's an average. It depends upon where you're going to teach, what your subject matters that you're going to teach, those types of things. If you've been out for a while and have a master's, let's say, in education, on average you'll be earning about $62,000. So let's say that you've been out for 5 to 10 years, you have your master's, you're earning about $62,000. You need to put that in your mind and say, well, you know, 5 to 10 years from now when I get my master's in education, if I'm teaching at a high school level or something, I'll probably be earning about $62,000. And you'll build your career around that. You know what you can afford and what you can spend. And if you're only earning $62,000, you know that you don't want to run student debt up through the roof, because it's going to take you a significantly long period of time to pay it off. Now, on the other hand, we mentioned engineering. Maybe you are inclined to be an electrical engineer or chemical engineer, mechanical engineer. There's a significant demand for people with engineering skills. You walk out with that brand new diploma, 4-year degree, and maybe your friend walked out with one, and your friend's going off to be a teacher. They're earning about $33,000. You're probably starting at $57,000 because of your because of engineering. Engineering is one of the highest paid skill sets from a graduate and an undergraduate degree program, and so that certainly, if you are inclined in science and math, you enjoy science and math, because engineering takes a whole bunch of this. So you'll probably start out with that brand new college diploma at about $57,000, and if you've been out there for a while, you'll probably earn up to about $93,000 a year on average. Depends upon what you're doing. If you decide that you want to go on and get a graduate degree, then you'll probably start at $78,000. That's an average again. And over a period of time, on average, you'll work up to about $114,000 a year with an engineering degree. So we can see that there is a significant difference between being an educator and an engineer as to what you're going to earn over a period of time. And again, like I said, it depends upon what you're in, what skill sets you have, what your interests are, and everything else. It could be that you really enjoy healthcare and you want to go into medicine. You want to be a nurse, which is absolutely wonderful that you want to do that, because there is a crying need for skilled and well-trained nursing and nursing staff these days. And healthcare can't find enough of them, to be real honest. And it's one of the reasons that the starting salary on a nurse graduating with a 4-year degree is about $43,000. And one of the reasons that if you have your master's, it jumps upwards to $67,000 a year in that in the healthcare profession, because there's a crying need for it. There's more demand than there is supply in this area, and I've seen more and more universities ramp up their healthcare operations in order to get people into the system and get them through the system to meet the demand that's in the market space. And that demand will continue over a very long period of time. So healthcare is always going to be into a very high demand. Other areas that are similar to that is the biological and life sciences, which are also in obviously high demand. And so if you go into a life science degree, that could be a medical degree, and you have a graduate graduate degree of that, you're probably starting around $57,000. You'll earn up to about $104,000 with some experience. And so that's a very high profession. Other high professions you will find in computer sciences and mathematics and statistics and physical sciences. Again, remember that acronym STEM. Almost all of these fit within those categories, in that we're looking at the sciences end of the world these days as a very important part of growing of not only America but growing the world. As we can see technology taking off, as we can see different types of skill sets even being used in the operating theater in a hospital, and all of these are very specialized skills, and therefore science, math, engineering, all of those technical types of training are very much in high demand, and therefore the dollars that you earn over a period of time certainly will be more. And that's, again, what's important is you've got to do something that you really love. If you don't, you're going to be bored with it. You're going to not be interested in it. You're not going to do your best. You're going to, pitch it off at some point in time, want to go and do something else. And in essence, you probably won't make the best decisions in the world doing that. You don't want to do something that, for the rest of your life, you're just going to sit there and dread. And I'm going to be honest with you. I have friends that have done that. They've gone off and they've gone into professions that they didn't like, and then over a period of time, they decided they wanted to go off and do something else. And it's kind of a costly retread, to be realized, because you've got to go backwards and do a whole bunch of stuff. So it's not the greatest plan in the world, and I'm not saying that they didn't plan. There are a lot of people that go on to colleges and universities, and they study things. I had friends that went off because their dad was a financial analyst or a banker or something. They went off and studied banking. I have a couple of friends that did that. Their parents, their father was a banker and did very, very well, but he liked banking. I mean, he really liked working with a financial institution, whether it being managing a credit union or managing a bank or being an investment manager of some sort, and that's what he liked to do. But he was also pretty strong-willed, and so the son or daughter decided that they were going to go off and study this same profession because that's what dad wanted them to do, or that's what mom wanted them to do. And so they went off and studied it, and they only found out that they really don't like it, and they would prefer to do something else. And you have to have that kind of heart-to-heart talk with the folks at a period of time, saying, that's really wonderful and everything else, but I'm not really crazy about it, and that's not really what I want to do. So, and that happens. We know it happens for kids that go into college and they take a look at the first couple of years, and they have taken some of the prerequisites, maybe, hopefully, while they were in college, but then they're taking the rest of the prerequisites at the college, or maybe it's a community college that they're going to transfer, and they find out that after doing all that type of stuff, this is not really what they're interested in. I know that when I was in high school, my mother pushed me to be a doctor. Now, that she wasn't mean about it or anything, but she really wanted me to be a doctor. And the reason that she wanted me to be a doctor is because her dad was a doctor, and so, she wanted me to go off and be kind of like her dad, and that was that she wanted me to be a doctor. Now, my father had a little bit of that leaning as well, because he wasn't a doctor, or his dad wasn't a doctor, but His mother's brother was a doctor, and so, you know, there was a little bit of meeting of minds between the parents that all of their kids were going to become doctors. And when I went in, and certainly I had the aptitude for it in science and math, what I found out, you know, real quickly was that although I scored very, very well in you know, organic and inorganic chemistry and did very well in those types of physical sciences, I didn't like sick people. And it's a little hard to be a doctor if you don't like sick people. It was just something, you know, I didn't want to be there. And that wasn't me. What I enjoyed was flying airplanes. And fortunately, they saw that. And so after a period of time, they calmed back down and they determined, well, if that's what you want to go off and do, then that's, you know, go off and do that. And you need to explore and you need to do the best that you can. So, I went off and explored that direction. Now, not everybody in my family went off. My older brother, for example, got his doctorate in biological sciences. Now, he didn't spend time with what I would call patients. He studied vision and then created things to help people correct their vision over a period of time. So he spent his time doing that. My sister spent a lot of time understanding foreign languages and could speak three or four foreign languages when she graduated from the university with foreign languages. I always thought that she was going to go to the UN and be a translator, but she decided that that's not what she was wanting to do, and she actually went out to California, worked with a large corporation out there, and basically was kind of a translator when they found out that she had foreign languages. Because they would call her in to client meetings to translate various terms in the contracts to people that were looking to borrow large sums of money. So, and she enjoyed doing that. So that's the thing that you have to understand is that, yeah, well, maybe some of these professions that I read, you earn a lot of money. And you know, you might be inclined to, oh, I want to go and do that because I want to earn a lot of money. And let me tell you, you can sit there and earn a lot of money and just hate what you do. And that's not the way you want to spend the rest of your life. And it certainly isn't what you want to do when you step out of college and realize that you have a big set of debt. So let's kind of wrap it up as we run down some of the things that I've talked about over the period of time. The one thing that you want to do is when you start out in high school is you want to start putting a plan together when you start in your junior year in high school, because you know during that summer you're going to travel all over, you're going to meet a lot of people, you're going to go to a lot of places, and you're going to make your decision as to what your career is going to be, because when you finish your senior year in high school and you come out of it on the other end, you're going to want to be prepared into some direction, whatever that may be, whether that's a technical college, whether that is a four-year degree program, whether that's a community college, whether that's military service, whatever it's going to be, you've got your focus and you've got your direction, and that's what you're going to do. And then you're going to want to put some numbers to all of that. How much can I afford? How much do I have in savings? What can I save over a period of time? How much is it going to cost? Add some escalators into that, too, because we know that it's going to escalate over a period of time, not, you know, next year, but it could. And so you want to put some numbers to that as to how much is all of that going to cost and how much can I afford. And if you can't afford it all, then you need to put a plan together as to, once I get out in 4 years or 6 years with this degree, then exactly what is it that I'm going to be earning right out of the chute? I'm not going to be earning $104,000 a year. That's just not going to happen, and we know that. So you're going to want to put together a plan to determine exactly how much money am I going to earn when I first get out in my four-year degree, so I can start paying back this loan, because the loan will start coming due certainly within a few months after I've left college. Well, thanks for joining me on this past hour. We have certainly covered a lot of territory. We will continue to do this in the next two Tuesdays on Your Money, Your Matters.